All right, let's get ready for the fastest 2 hours in hockey. Nah, not really, but what do you think? How fast is it?
It's pretty fast.
Pretty fast?
I think so.
Okay, let's get it going then.
All right, here we go. Can we talk faster? Let's go faster.
I don't know. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. It's the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Derek Brandeo and Jake the Serpent Schultz. You've changed his name on me.
So let me ask you. Do you think anybody listens to our show at double time? Because that's an option on like...
At what time?
Double time, like fast.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah?
Maybe not double, but one and a half.
Do you ever listen to a podcast one and a half?
I only listen at like that's 1.3.
Psychopath behavior.
1.5.
I can't believe that.
It does help, though.
Help with what?
Get you through it faster.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, I'm on the subway twice a day, every day. Like,
the normal
speed is fine.
So was this... Was this you actually wanting to change Jake's nickname or just you testing me to see if I'm paying attention to your lineup?
Well, I thought we went with the more professional word for snake because a serpent. So, because he's been
that
good recently.
For me.
The serpent.
It is misspelled.
No!
Is it?
Serpent is ENT.
ENT.
I think so.
That's so appropriate. That's awesome stuff.
And I'm sitting here, like, you guys, I get to the office today. I wore my uniform, a hoodie and a hat. Very, very used to that. And you guys don't usually dress like $1 million. I walk in here, and these two guys, I feel like I'm at a Halloween party, no costume. Like, I'm like, what? You guys make me look so more stupid than I usually do.
We have a reason.
Yeah, we do.
I know.
Yeah.
We're on the game tonight.
We are, but for now... we've got wherever you're watching and listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. We got Leaf Hour Edition. Then we go into a national show. And to your point, JB, we race over and we've got literally less than 30 minutes between our show and the pregame show.
Start of the show, yeah.
For Toronto and Anaheim. The Ducks are in town making their only visit tonight at Scotiabank. They are on... the second half of a back-to-back. You covered them last night with the game between Ottawa and Anaheim.
And let me tell you, they are must-see TV. You will not want to miss it.
I had to say, I was watching the broadcast last night.
Yeah.
And when we had Ben in, my nephew, we did a tour of like the NHL studio. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I was blown away by you guys sitting in those seats. Like
it's
CGI.
Crazy.
Or whatever the hell it
graphic,
is.
Graphic, eh?
It was unbelievable. And it really looked like when they zoomed in on you guys, it really looked like you're. I was amazed by that. Whoever did that over there, you guys are amazing.
Okay. I don't want to put a downer on
it. Oh, here we go.
And I'm not saying it didn't look good.
Yeah.
This is the part I hate.
Oh, no.
It's fake.
Yeah.
It's phony.
Oh, they didn't go to sit in a rink with seats?
No. I'm not happy every time I pick up my phone and I don't know what to believe, what's real and what's not real.
You know what? That's a fair complaint.
That's it.
Yeah.
I have enough of it. I got to look twice to think, where are you?
It is so true.
And it's fake. Mm-hmm. Fake TV. And I'm buying into the, I'm not happy about fake TV all the time.
I got to believe the next generation is going to be good at discerning. That's going to be harder and harder to what's fake and real.
Like, did you see something today? Because you sent a very, like, text about Corbin Burns and the Jays. Did you see something fake that got you then?
Of course I did.
Oh.
Of course. Every time I see something, I don't believe it. So you're my Blue Jay expert.
Yeah, they did.
Because someone said that he signed with the Jays, and I'm like, I don't believe it until I go to Sammy.
He didn't.
He didn't.
And if you read Ben Nicholson-Smith and Shai Davidson's latest from Sportsnet.ca, I don't think he's coming. Mm. Anyways.
Okay. Just one last thing on this, like, fake computer enhanced
augmented
TV.
Augmented reality.
Yes.
I believe they call like, it AR.
Are they going to put us in a closet one day and make it look like the most spectacular set ever?
Well, no. They're going to send us home, not pay us, and have animated figures.
Yeah. It's going to have humans that look like, or fake
they're
humans.
They're not going to need us at all.
Yeah.
Okay. You covered the Anaheim Ducks last night.
Yep.
Not their finest effort. They kind of looked like... I'm not sure if that's a real NHL team or not. Kind of look like are they the worst team in the league?
If the Leafs don't feed them their absolute lunch today, it's embarrassing.
That's the point I wanted to get across, is that based on what you saw last night, is now you and everyone else, including our Sammy here, going to sit and watch tonight and say, if they don't absolutely crush them by X amount of goals, then it's not a good night for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It would be really bad. The Ottawa Senators had so much room last night. I sent you guys, I think, a screenshot of where the Ducks rank in defensive categories. Expected goal, shot attempt, shots on net, slot shots, inner slot shots, slot passes, OZ possession time, rush chances. Last.
Yeah.
They are dead last in every defensive category. They've played three times in the last four nights, all road games. Last night, all their guys had a shift of 2 minutes or more dragging their legs out. Ottawa was running them ragged.
Yeah.
They're the worst team in back-to-backs over the past 2 years in the NHL.
Oh, my God.
All they have going for them is this Lucas Dostal, their goaltender, is fourth best in the NHL in save percentage. He's good. If he doesn't see 40 shots tonight, I don't know what to tell you about the Leafs offense.
So in about half an hour, we're going to welcome in Scott Niedermeyer to the program. We got a chance to talk to him a little earlier. Mm-hmm. He's out in BC, but he was kind enough to join us. Special advisor to the Anaheim Ducks. We'll get some thoughts in on him on where the progress is and this rebuild to get to where he was once upon a time, a long time ago. And that's top of the mountain with the Stanley Cup. But they've got some work to do, no question. As far as the Toronto Maple Leafs are concerned, where do you guys want to start? For me, hearing the news that they're going back to Anthony Stolarz is somewhat surprising to me.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But he will start against one of the worst teams in the league. Let's go to you first, JB.
You know, I don't understand it just because it's not that Stolarz, it doesn't make sense to start a guy who's playing well, but he's been playing well and he's been alternating with Wall, who's also playing well. Everyone's doing great. Keep them both involved. They're both going to play in a back-to-back this weekend. I really don't get why you would step out of the rhythm here.
I think that he was unbelievable against
Super
the Devils.
Yep.
And the only reason they got 2 points against a good team, and he's been really good on home ice, and he earned the start, flat out.
What did Joseph Woll do in his last game?
I would say that he lost to the, was he in against the Penguins? They lost the Penguins on Saturday night.
Okay. Yep. All right. That's not good enough to.
So I just think that you have a plan, and Berube's talked about how we have a plan, all these different things. But I do think it's still,
it's the plan.
There you go. It's professional sports. You perform that well. I said it yesterday. I would like to see him start tonight. I'm glad they did it.
Sammy,
I think it's the right call.
They play 11 times in 21 days here. So now he's going to have played three times in 6 days or something coming up for this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, do you need to lean on a guy who's never played this sort of workload in his life?
Okay, let's go to Craig Berube on why Stolarz is starting, and then we'll pick up the conversation out of it.
Looks like you might change your goaltending rotation a bit. Is that based on Stolarz having a really good game, or is a greater plan with the back-to-back coming up?
Back-to-backs, too, but, you know, Stoli had a one hell of a game. We all know that. So that was the call tonight to go back with him.
There you go. And, you know, former team. He was a Duck at one point, I guess. Maybe you could look at that. I don't know if that's a factor here, but with all those stats you read off there, I mean, are we expecting a super high-impact night here?
Good point.
I think it's just a thing that you reward a guy who's been unbelievable for you to start the year.
Yeah, it might even be a little deeper for me anyways, just in terms of his game was so good.
So good.
That maybe they just want to see if he could follow it up with another one. And I know it'll be a different feel, different team. You go from one of the top teams in the league to one of the worst. But if he can pick up where he left off, I think it bodes well that although we believe Joseph Woll isn't going anywhere, right now the projection seems to be that Stolarz will start in the playoffs.
Well, I think that's the greater point here.
And it might feel like a scenario where he stole the game in game one. You want to see him pick up because he's going game two. And I just feel like the window's now so tight that he's coming off such a spectacular game that in their minds, maybe it's a feel like, can we go up 2-0 in the series right now by going right back to our best goalie?
Yeah. You know, they do play three games in four nights here.
They will split.
Yeah, but one of those guys has to play two of the three. So, you know, if you think he's hot, I guess that makes some sense. But I love this point where it's like, you know, looking at the big picture, we thought going into the year it was like they want Wall to be the guy. It makes sense for him with the contract, the age, whatever, for him to be the guy. It does feel like it's shifted to where all things equal, they have so much belief in Stolarz. He's bigger, he's competitive, that they would want him to be the guy now.
I think
there's no question in my mind who would be game one, but that's now in December. So
yeah.
It's hard to
know. Yeah. I do believe that like he's had such an amazing start, and we're closing in on Christmas right now, that they've got to really start focusing on, what are we now, 50 games left? That it's going to skew towards Stolarz, but you're going to give Wall enough games and enough starts that, you know, if it goes south on Stolarz early or at any point, you won't be that patient to switch it up if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there's no one on, one off in the playoffs. There isn't. It's the hot guy.
For sure.
And this is just maybe a first chance for Stolarz to go hot in consecutive games.
It's just funny, right? Just I agree, but it's funny that like Wohl going into the year is like, all right, I'm going to have a chance to be the 1A. They're bringing in a 1B sort of guy, right, based on contract and whatever. And then he is a .919 save percentage. He's well above, you know, whatever expected goals. He's done wonderfully this year. And now he's like, so I'm out?
Yeah,
But, I mean, I understand. Hey, he can see what the guy ahead of him is doing.
He's smart enough to understand that if I was a coach or general manager, I wouldn't look at me as being
out.
You know, a guy that deserves equal status right now with Stolarz, that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been good, but that guy's been out of this world.
Sammy's group chat. Sammy sent us the picture.
Oh, yeah.
They got the banner hanging. It's like Tim Horton, Bill Barilko, Stolarz. They got him in the rafters already.
I've seen Legends Row, and it's like this guy is. People love this guy. And how could you not?
Yeah.
How could you not? Yeah. I will say that you talk about the playoff stuff, and you know, you've given me the hairy eyeball, as you like to say, when I've said that there's reasons I have more hope about this year and blah, blah, blah.
But
hold on.
Yeah.
I do think, because when teams go to the other goalie in the playoffs, I think most times it's more of the backup guy to wake up call for the starter. This is, if the Leafs go down 2-0 in a series or they lose a bad game, the goalie's bad, you're going to another really good NHL goalie. You're flipping over the page to another guy that's going to give you a chance to win. So, I don't know. It's another the goaltending's really good and gives me hope.
So good in the playoffs. So good. And then disappeared.
So good. Anyways, it's just that is one of the reasons.
One thing I'll add about Stolarz, one thing I liked about the game against the Devils is they gave him no support. And he fought and fought and then got rewarded and then got the win. And that builds that mutual trust. And remember we talked about trust with the goalie last year where they go, we know he's got our back and now he knows we've got his. If he keeps us in it, it's really good.
And that's really appreciate the superstar, but he's only playing 20 minutes out of 60. Yeah. That guy has got he's protecting the wall every single second, you know, excuse the pun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. That's the only position. It's like a starting pitcher. You can win 1-0. Okay. And you don't necessarily have to get that run in the first 5 or 6 innings. It's when you got a pitcher, you got
you're
a quarterback.
About the Jays offense?
Got a goalie. We can be patient and wait. Yeah. So I wrote an article today in the Toronto Star on it a little bit. We've talked many years over our show since we started together that they've always outscored their mistakes. That's not how they're getting it done now. From the net on out.
I will say, as someone who pays attention to the analytics, it's good right now that they are winning. Their goaltending has been phenomenal. The process is a little concerning offensively, but you love that they have the all-stars that they have that can create. Like, usually when teams can't produce offense, they don't have exceptional elite talents like the Leafs. So I feel like they're going to be able to find it. And that's what I wrote about Kip yesterday.
Yeah.
Was a similar idea that the goaltending has bought them time to figure out the offense, and whether that means trading for additional offense,
yes,
Matthews finding it a bit more, yeah, getting more from the back end. This has bought them time to find it.
I do think that there's this unhealthy pushback against people that suggest that they have some offensive issues right now. I feel like people are like, oh, they're winning. I think it's fair to acknowledge the fact that they cannot create much at all right now. No. But the point that you made is important, that their defensive metrics are excellent goaltending. They can figure it out. They have stars that can get
the big
goals.
They've produced before.
Exactly.
You know, and their power play is at 19%. We know it can be a 25% power play. There's more there for this Leafs offense.
Yeah.
And they'll continue to search, I think, internally until we do see a trade eventually for some offense. But we got Craig Berube on a Kipper's Clipper on some of the depth that may be coming back soon in camp and McMahon. Let's have a listen.
Camp is probably a little bit of ways away yet, but Bobby McMahon is very close. So practice today, he'll skate with us tomorrow, and then we'll see.
So it sounds like a potential for the weekend.
Yeah.
Tonight on the show, we're going to focus a little bit on that left side. I've brought this up on a couple occasions. We're going to kind of focus on it in our pregame show tonight. It's been a sore spot for this team for not just this year, but many years. And there's nothing to not like about Matthew Knies, but is he quite ready to carry the load as a bona fide number one left winger, which means also producing at a pretty good rate? That hasn't happened. McMahon, to me, is also a key in all of this, that he has not been able to stay healthy to show that he can go to next level 20-20.
Yeah, you can't get to those numbers if you're not in the lineup.
So we'll see where Max kind of fits in the next few weeks. For me, it's got to be somewhere on that left side.
For McMahon, sorry?
No, for Max.
Domi.
For Max.
Like with Matthews Marner?
Totally.
Something.
Totally.
Something.
Yeah, me too.
Right? I like, outside of Max, and then, you know, where you feel about Pacioretty, they've been playing with two fourth lines for quite a while now.
Yes, well put.
Yeah.
So
two fourths and a third when Matthews is out.
Yeah.
Time.
Lean times. Yeah.
Time now to kind of figure it out. And for me, somewhere in the equation is Max Domi on the wing.
Yeah. One of the things that we do have a clip on for Berube, how do you spend less time in the D zone? And that's when I talk about their offense not being good. They've been in their own end a lot. So why don't we listen to him on how they can spend less time in the D zone?
Killing plays quicker and exiting the zone quicker. You know, when we kill plays and get the puck, where's our routes? Let's get going. Transition from defense to offense. Well, we got to be better at that.
Jake McCabe will help.
There it is. That's good news. He's back.
Just to the Domi thing quickly before we move to McCabe. Don't you think, I mean, they signed him to four-year, $3.75 million for him? Like, to me, the best way to extract the offensive value on that contract is to play him with the star players. That's where he's the best. We've seen him play with Matthews when that stretch when Marner was out, when it was him, Domi, and Bertuzzi. They have chemistry. They like to play together. They're two passers on the wing of the center, maybe not to Kipper's favorite thing with the center being the passer. But to me, it's obvious. And you think they'll go to it here somewhat soon, you think? Or
can't agree with you more.
Yeah.
It's the onus now is on Berube to give Max the best chance to find a small window to kind of get going a bit. And it may be with reuniting him with Austin.
Well, like, whoever gets a chance tonight should get some points.
I mean, I look at that. Like, I look at Holmberg, Minton, and Domi. And, you know, if there's one thing I know about Domi, if you're playing him on a third line with, like, not offensive players, like, you know, Minton's got a bit of touch, but Holmberg's got the opposite of it, you're just going to lose him. He's not as involved.
No, he told us he doesn't care if he gets...
Like, you're not using him properly. And it's like, that's maybe... He doesn't have the experience of having him. Like, Sheldon kind of figured it out towards the end of last year where to play him. But it's just, you're losing him playing him on the third line. It's not the right spot for him. So, anyways.
No.
Domi, Matthews, and Marner, to me.
Yes.
Against Anaheim tonight makes sense.
They would terrorize the Ducks.
Yes.
I did a little thing on Pinto last night, who has one goal and three assists for Ottawa this year in about 20 games. and looked at the difference for him as line mates. He played last year with Tkachuk, Norris, Batherson, and those guys. This year he's playing with Amadio, Greg, and Gregor, sorry. And, like, that to me is Domi. It's like, his numbers are down. It's like, well, you know, Holmberg's not going to shoot it in the net. I know he did last game, but it ain't going to happen often. So,
yeah.
Jake McCabe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's back.
I think he'll go a long way to helping Craig Berube get the puck out cleaner.
Let's listen to clip one on McCabe coming back.
Yeah, he's a big part of our team back there with, you know, him and Tanny, shut down pair and penalty killing and just, you know, physical play and just, you know, defending and things like that. So he's a big part of our team. So it'd be great to have him back.
One of my favorite ideas for a sports talk radio show, maybe brought this up before, but is the hockey nickname quiz. And Tanev, to me, Tanny is not what I would go with.
Wait, Tansy?
Tanner.
Tanner?
Tanner. Tanny to me doesn't sound right. Anyways, that's a sidebar.
That's a very Jay and Dan.
Tanny.
Luke Gastic knows all the nicknames.
Yeah, I actually should do this with him. Like,
he
it's like,
knows all of them.
But like Tanny, it's Tanner. Tanner. Anyways, Tano. Go ahead.
Danny Tanner.
yeah, prior to McCabe going down, him and Tanny.
No, it's not right.
No, we can't do it.
It's not right. It's just not right.
Didn't roll out that well. As good as any that we've seen around.
Yeah, and I think he mentioned that clip about how they need to get out of their own end.
Yeah.
That's something I've noticed without him they've missed. Like just a quick little slip to the middle or break up a play, and obviously Timmins and Myers can't quite do it like McCabe does.
And McCabe's...
Caber.
Caber?
Sneaky... Caber. Like sneaky leader in that room.
Where you don't anymore.
You don't really kind of think about him as that first wave of go-to guys, but I'm telling you right now, Gary's a big stick in that room.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I mean, every time I see him do an interview, the more his nose is broken and the more I respect him as a leader. It's like, this guy looks like if he's not going to be an extra in Peaky Blinders, he's going to be a leader on a hockey team.
I wish I could give credit to whoever I saw put this out, but it was like, he looks like he would carry a Tommy gun in a gangster movie.
Like
his face looks like he'd carry a Tommy gun in a gangster movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got some grit to his game.
You go to your desk and you'd be the banker.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd
I'd
be
say
like,
yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Whatever you need.
I definitely get shot in that scene.
Oh yeah, you're done.
Done like dinner.
Scene one.
Done. By order of the Peaky Blinders.
There you go. What do you have on Lorenz?
You know that he didn't take a penalty yet this year? He leads the team in hits?
I don't know if that's allowed on, like, the fourth line.
No penalties.
Listen to the clip. I don't think I've heard Berube really talk about Lorenz much, and he's been good. So play the clip on Lorenz. We can talk about
him. He's been really clean, which is good. You know, he's been physical. You know, he's one of the hit leaders on our team. And, you know, I think he doesn't get his stick in bad areas, and he skates. You know, I think when you take penalties, you're reaching from behind or you're not skating, moving your feet, and your sticks are in bad spots, whether, you know, you high stick a guy or you trip him or hook him or whatever. So he's been clean that way with not taking any of those penalties, which is good.
See, now you know we're in another era when a coach can say that in 2024. If you're on the fourth line in my era, you got goose eggs. It's okay. Goals, assists,
what?
Points.
No way.
Goose egg in the penalty minutes?
Yeah.
Not a good look.
No.
So, I'm not talking about going out there and tripping somebody.
No, you're not.
I'm talking about
being enough on the edge.
How about a scrum where both of you go off for either 2 minutes or 5 minutes?
So the hits leader in the NHL is Kiefer Sherwood with about 163. Lorenz leads the Leafs with 70. Do you know how many William Nylander has?
Four.
28 games.
Four. I don't know.
Kip?
No.
One.
One?
One.
He threw a body check this year.
One? There's no way that's right.
One hit.
That's some Nylander bias.
Can we
the league
find
office.
It?
Yeah,
can
it was October 24th or something. I actually have the stat. Where is it? Yeah, October 24th, he threw his last hit. So for a player who has seen at least 300 minutes of ice time, he is... second lowest, one player in the NHL has played more than Nylander and only thrown one hit. The answer is also shocking. Shea Theodore. A D-man on Team Canada. Thrown one hit this year.
I don't like that.
Other got names in the list.
He's like Lidstrom there. If you got the puck all the time.
Tommy Novak, Jack Roslovic, Cam Fowler. Cam Fowler has two hits this year.
I got to tell you. Theodore, you're off.
That's enough.
Kyle, you're done.
You know my first thought
is... Get somebody else in there, bud. You're done.
Who's counting?
Exactly.
I want to meet the guy that counts.
But the fact is someone's counting, and they have Simon Benoit and Ryan Reeves at the top of the list with Knies and Lorenz. Like, they're getting it kind of right here. McCabe.
If you went up, yeah, like...
Ex-player.
Pacioretty.
Doing the counting?
No.
Has he ever...
No, it's an old guy with a monocle who just loves being at the games, but that's fine.
And a seeing eye dog.
If you go up to Shea Theodore and be like, hey, buddy, you have one hit this year. He'd be like, are you nuts?
Yeah.
Are you nuts? Like, there's no way he would say that he has one hit.
But I told you guys, like, Tanev has five. You know, it depends how you...
Tanev has five all year?
All year, five hits.
Oh, my God. That's wrong.
Wild, eh?
Like, what are they...
Good stick, separate.
But, like, what makes a hit?
Well, that's very subjective.
Someone, like, pushing back.
I think someone, you go into someone hard enough that they stop their movement. How's that?
Okay.
Close?
We got to go here soon to get the Niedermeyer, but there's this clip that I had to defend my Toronto people, my Toronto brethren. Can you play this clip 7 from Berube, please, Derek?
Were you guys okay out there today? A little windy and cold for you, or are you all right? I had a t-shirt on, got in my truck this morning.
Hey, Alberta guy.
Is it -6 today?
Listen, yeah, it feels like
it was chilly out there today. 14. Like, there's no question it's cold. But, yes. Like, why do people that are from outside of Toronto gatekeep the cold? Like, oh, you're not allowed to be cold because you're from Toronto? It's not cold there. It's not cold. I hate that. All I ever hear, like, my city buddy from Owen Sound, they're like, oh, yeah, it's supposed to snow 80 centimeters up here. You get any down there? Like, no one... Just stop that. Stop gatekeeping the cold, people from outside of Toronto. It's so stupid.
We went through the same thing when I first went to training camp with the Philadelphia Flyers. Yeah. It's like the Western Hockey League would laugh at us in the O in the Ontario League for just not being remotely
all the boys in Saskatoon. It's
not remotely as tough as them.
Oh, yeah. It's not cold North Bay, eh? Like, it never gets cold there. Like, give me a break.
Buddy, we can't pretend that it's... Yeah. Not colder there.
Of course it's
but
colder.
They don't need to be.
Of course it's colder. Yes. We get it. Like, but they're like, it's just the insinuation. You're so soft because it's not cold. It's like, shut up.
I will tell you, lived in Alaska for years. It's cold and it's not fun.
No, it's cold.
Not anything to be proud of.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, the guys like wear shorts in the winter. Like, we get it. You're the toughest guy
ever.
It's not cold.
Tough.
It's not cold.
Ruby's mom gave birth in an igloo. All right? He can handle the cold.
He's cold.
He is tough. So no challenge to him.
But I actually would say that he might have worn a t-shirt today.
For sure.
Like, I actually believe him. Anyways, we should go.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. And when we return, four-time Stanley Cup champion, Hall of Famer, Scott Niedermeyer, next on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
As we mentioned before the break, we caught up to Hockey Hall of Famer Scott Niedermeyer just prior to the show. Let's have a listen. The Ducks continue their tour in Canada tonight with the second half of a back-to-back. Ottawa last night, Toronto tonight at Scotiabank Arena. Joining us now, Hall of Famer, one of the best in the game, four-time Stanley Cup champion, Scott Niedermeyer. Scott, thanks for doing this, man. Where do we find you these days?
I'm out in British Columbia at the moment, at home here. So be watching tonight.
Awesome. Let's just start with the Ducks in general. I think, you know, it's safe to say that you were there at the peak with a Stanley Cup championship. And then just the ongoing rebuild to get to that point again. Little level of frustration at times. You watch him maybe take two steps, maybe three steps backwards. Where do you have their program right now moving forward?
Yeah, I don't know if you can ever go through something like this quick enough. You know, everyone likes to win. No one likes to lose. And you get in these positions. We got a lot of young players and this is a tough league. That's for sure. And you always want to be taking steps forward. And sometimes the journey is not always forward. There's a few steps backwards, but I feel our play this year has been good. We were having a hard time scoring goals. It looks like we've made improvements in some areas. When you watch our games sort of night in and night out, we look better. We're just really not getting the results right now. And hopefully at some point that will come. We can break through and score some goals to help us get on the winning side.
Scott, I'm sure they're pleased to have someone with your career success involved, staying with the organization. What is your role with the team right now? What do you find yourself doing on a day-to-day with the Ducks?
The title is advisor, and I kind of do a little bit of everything, a little player development, talk with management a bit, as well as the coaching staff. So try and catch up with the team. I currently live up in BC, so I'm not with them full-time, but I do try and catch up with them every 5 weeks, every month, to watch some games live. See some games in San Diego as well, and just stay in touch with the team so I can give some advice that hopefully is worth something.
Got to ask you about the most recent acquisition of Jacob Trouba. It's not quite in the we just acquired Scott Niedermayer kind of level, but what do you see in that move? Why would a Pat Verbeek go after him at this point of the program? And your overall thoughts of bringing a guy like that in?
I think one of the things that we're trying to do is bring in true pros, guys that have played in the league for a while, to really be an example for our young guys. I know my personal situation when I started playing in New Jersey, our whole team was full of veterans, especially on the back end, 10-year pros. It was a great situation for me to be in, just to watch these guys, to see what it took to be an NHL player, to be successful. And I think that's what we're trying to do. If we can get some guys in that have had success in this league, that have been really good players, play with an edge, play hard, compete hard. I think that's what we're trying to build as far as our culture in Anaheim, is a hard competing team. Obviously, Pat, as the GM, was a tough player, a competitive player, and that's what he wants our team to be.
You got a couple of young guys on the back end there, Mintyukov and Zellweger. What are your thoughts on how they've been for the Ducks so far?
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch. It is definitely not a straight line. Mintyukov had a great year last year. His first year, he's come in his second year and maybe found it, not quite as smooth. Whereas Zellweger started in the minors last year and has come in and continued to play well, and just kind of picked up where he left off last year. So that's the way it is. I think you look back on anybody's career, there's ups and downs. And for young guys, especially defensemen, it's a tough position to learn. And we're patient. We're, wanting them to do it the right way. And, we're not going to get there tonight. That's for sure. So it's a long process.
You're watching and listening to Scott Niedermayer, four-time Stanley Cup champion, Hall of Famer, and advisor to hockey ops for the Anaheim Ducks. Speaking of which, Scott, of the ups and downs, I got to ask you about Trevor Zegras. I think 5 years ago, he was almost like this can't-miss kid coming in, to the point where a lot of talk about him, either through individual efforts of a goal or being on the cover of a video game, and yet it's been a tremendous struggle. We know he's hurt and he's out now, but looking back on his struggles, what's holding him back? What has been his biggest obstacle from getting to the point where we're talking about others, young players, great in the game today?
Yeah, I guess sort of from my perspective, he came in, joined maybe a little bit of an older team, just went out there and played hockey, did what he's done his whole life with his talent and skill, and had some success with that. Obviously, now we're maybe a little bit younger up front. He's not surrounded by the same players he was when he came in, and maybe asked to sort of add some things to his game, to sort of play the, whatever you want to call it, 200-foot game, sort of commit to that side of it with the eye on the long term here of being a successful hockey team, to try and be in the playoffs and have success there. And I think that's been the focus the last couple of years in Anaheim. And it can be a tough process. I remember playing for Jacques Lemaire. There were some stretches during my career where I was struggling and trying to figure out mentally how to play the game with the way he wanted and help our team succeed. So it can be difficult. Trevor's relied probably on his offensive skill his whole life, and obviously it's taken him to the top level of hockey. So for him to kind of push through and battle some injuries along the process here, I think before this last injury, he really was showing a lot of signs of sort of ramping up his compete all over the ice in our own end, in those little battles for loose pucks and winning them with his skill set. So it's unfortunate that he ended up getting hurt again, and it was kind of definitely headed in the right direction.
Kip, did you want to say Ducks, or can I move to Team Canada? Yeah, all right. I thought we'd get your thoughts. You got the Canadian jersey behind us. We're back to best on best competition. You yourself got to your two-time gold medalist. You know, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings on the Four Nations face-off and Canada returning to best on best?
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see. I mean, as a kid, it was always a highlight watching Canada Cups. You're watching the best players in the world play against each other and with, you know, on the same team for Team Canada. So that was a highlight for me. And then to get the chance to actually do it, you know, whether it was a World Junior or in the Olympics and World Cup, those tournaments, always a highlight. Again, to represent your country and then also play with, you know, some other great players, getting to meet them and be teammates with them. So to see that back on the rails again as a hockey fan, great to see. I know the players probably love it as well. So excited about that. I know this is probably just a little teaser before we get back into the Olympics, but why not get started and have some fun with it?
Got to ask you what you see today out of the blue line. We look back in your heyday and you led it, Chris Pronger, that era compared to maybe what Cale Makar and others are doing today.
Well, I think in general, the game obviously has become more skilled all the way through the lineup. I think that's pretty obvious. Definitely maybe a little different as far as the toughness of the game and the way it's played. You know, but these players are fun to watch. I think you look at the blue line that Canada put together, there still is some size there and some guys that are going to defend hard and make it difficult for other teams. I think that's always a success to winning when you can kind of make that other team really earn their offensive chances. And the Canadians have some of those guys on the blue line for sure.
We had a chat yesterday. We were talking about Evan Bouchard, and we were talking about how defensemen who take offensive chances, they make really great plays, often have a moment or two where they turn the puck over and it doesn't look good. And I asked Kip if he thought, is it possible to be a big mistake D-man when you're young and learn, get that out of your game over the course of your career? I guess you'd have the best perspective of all on that.
You're saying I made some big mistakes?
I'm not at all. I'm saying you would know more than me.
No, I did. You're right. You're right on. And I think that's sort of, you know, when Jacques was in Anaheim there for a stretch, it was tough to figure that out. You know, like when do you take the chance? When do you look to push to create offense? And when do you sort of make a decision to decide, let's move this puck up and not take a chance right now, whether it's the timing of the game, the situation, who you're doing it against? Lots of stuff goes into it. I think it's a lot of trial and error and experience as a hockey player. So I think it is. I think you have to be held accountable. I know it wasn't all that comfortable for me at times going through that process, but you know, I'm pretty sure it made me a better player all around for my team and allowed us to have more success when you do kind of figure that out.
I know it's an individual thing, but generally speaking, when you were young breaking in and you made that glaring mistake that none of us remember, but you may have, did it scare you? Did it make you worry? Are the kids less up to worry about it so much? And is that a good thing or maybe not a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I don't think I worried a ton about it until I had to play for Jacques Lemaire and in New Jersey, we were going to play a certain style and it was basically to give the other team nothing. You know, and then I kind of recognized after, you know, a few mistakes, I'd probably find myself sitting on the end of the bench for the rest of the period. And obviously that's where no player wants to be. And then the next time you get out there, obviously there is some thoughts in the back of your head. Well, how do I do this now? If I make this decision, I might be sitting on the bench again. So it you really have to find your way through it. It's a difficult thing to sort through that. You know, young players, I think, are always going through an element of that or a degree of that in their game, trying to balance the two sides of the game and be effective for their team. So for sure. I mean, I think there is some thought of it, and obviously the culture, the coaches, the way your team plays is going to dictate sort of, you know, the pressure that's put on you to play both ends of the rink.
My follow-up question would be, you know, what would be your thought process if you missed a shift or was benched, but you never experienced that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I experienced it for a couple of years. I sat on the bench a lot. And, you know, the funny thing was it was different a lot, right? Sometimes you're getting mad at the coach and not really maybe looking in the mirror and kind of trying to learn from it. And obviously the best way to approach it was to kind of look in the mirror and say, okay, yeah, that wasn't a smart thing. And next time I get out there, I won't try not to do that. So it was a process. It took a long time for me to kind of figure my game out of how to fit in with what Jacques wanted with us in New Jersey and how we had to play. And me as one of the members of that team as the decor. So, but it definitely, I'm thankful for it. It made me a better player. I think it made me help our teams more in whatever situation it was, whether it was in New Jersey, Anaheim, playing for Team Canada. I think I was a player that the coaches could trust sort of in any situation and helped our team have more success.
Scott, is there anyone in today, who's you in today's NHL? Is it Quinn Hughes? Who do? Is there someone you watch and say that was me?
Well, there's guys I wish I could be. Hughes and McCarr. I mean, there's so many Heiskanen. I mean, these guys, they can skate and the skill they're able to display, you know, during the game now is amazing. It wasn't quite that way. It was, you know, you had to really fear for your wrists, your fingers, your hands. If you wanted to carry the puck 30 years ago, you were putting your health in jeopardy, but, you know, it's fun to watch these guys. The skill all the way, you know, up and down, forwards, goalies, everybody is amazing. But obviously as a defender, I really do enjoy watching those guys that are so good with the puck, can skate so well and create offense. It's fun to watch.
One sec, Kip, before we go. Sure. We had Ken Danico on yesterday or the day before. He played 1,236 NHL games and scored 35 times. Well, tell us about playing with Ken Danico. Did you see similarities in your game, you and Ken?
Well, Kenny always used to say about how he scored points in junior. So, you know, he learned the lesson quick when he got to the NHL that wasn't going to be his game. But he's one of those guys that made it tough to play. Great teammate, you know, a big reason why we had success in New Jersey. He gave you everything he could every single night, and whatever it took to help our team win, he was willing to do it. Great teammate, really was a great person for me to kind of come in under as a veteran, really cared about me, whether it was on the ice, off the ice. And that makes you feel good when you're a young guy, for sure.
Hey, you can't bake a cake with the same ingredients.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
Hey, absolutely.
Scott, really appreciate your time, man, for doing this. You know, keep enjoying the season. Keep doing the great work with the Ducks, and we'll join up again real soon, maybe around Four Nations time. We'd love to have you back.
Perfect. Nope. Sounds good, guys. Good talking to you. Take care.
Thanks for your time.
That is Scott Niedermeyer, four-time Stanley Cup champion and one of the best to ever play the game. It's great stuff. I call BS. Do you think he was benched ever?
You know, it's funny. I'd be curious to know how long he was benched for. These guys miss a shift or two and they're great. And they're like,
Yeah.
You know, I doubt he sat there for a whole hockey game.
We did talk about one of their faces of the franchise, Trevor Zegras, who's not in the lineup tonight, will not be a part of the Toronto Maple Leaf game tonight. But there is an update on his knee injury he suffered last week, Sammy.
Yes, the Ducks announced today that Trevor Zegras has successful knee surgery to repair a torn meniscus. He's expected to miss about 6 weeks. I think Friedge was saying that it was a little better news than they were expecting, so maybe a little shorter timeline than that they thought it was going to be. So they will not be seeing Zegras tonight. No Michigan attempts at Scotiabank Arena.
Well, his season's not over.
Yeah.
No, that's nice. You know, really struggling to find it. 24 games. He's got 10 points. He's dashed 7, which is the worst in the team, playing under 17 minutes a night. Not that those are necessarily terrible numbers, but there were high expectations that he would be a producer.
Interesting to hear still Scott talk about him breaking in early, mentioning that it was an older guy's room, which obviously means that the young hotshot comes in, tries to do it his way. It may have worked for him in the past, as Scott said, but that to me was just the first step of what may slow down your progression, is that there's still a pecking order. There's still hierarchy in a room. Mm-hmm. And if you don't necessarily acknowledge it, and I'm not saying that you got to just not be yourself but he rubbed people the wrong way. He kept trying to do things his own way. It didn't work. Pat Verbeek comes in, says, no, we're going to do it differently. And that's the progress that that I think's been missing, as Scott had just mentioned.
I think there's this perception in certain sects of the hockey fan base or fans in general where they think that hockey people are no fun and don't want creativity or fancy play, and that like a guy like Zegras comes in and all of us want to stomp out the fun and energy and uniqueness from his game. But it's not that. It's that we've watched playoff hockey for so long.
Oh, yeah.
And a certain thing works. You know, it's not that type of hockey. And we had his skills coach, Adam Oates, come on and say, you know, it's funny, Valley got killed for the Jack Hughes Instagram hockey thing or whatever. But Oates had said that the year before on our show about Zegras. I think maybe even used that phrase now that I think about it.
It could have been.
That, you know, sometimes you have to chip it by a guy. Sometimes you have to get there and we don't want to take the fun out of his game and creativity and all that, but there you have to have success in the league. There's a style that works best.
Once the calendar flips to April, you got to beat it to a square and bounce it off somebody's leg.
Just to kind of bring this back to the Toronto Maple Leafs as we close out our segment here on our Leaf Edition Hour. Is that what Berube's been trying to tell the likes of Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares and all the rest of them?
I think that's a big part of this is that, you know, people are looking at some of the Leafs' success and going, well, they're getting great goaltending and penalty killing. That's why they're, you know, they're having success. And it's like, that's what they want to do. I know it's not great. You know, you need to create more than they have, but still they're trying to be different and they're different.
And, you know, every time Berube's talked about this, he's given the group credit for, you know, buying into the group. We listened to Shanahan talking to Kyle at the BOG about how impressed he is that the people buying in, and like, that's all you can ask for. And, you know, like you said, Kipper, that there's going to be an adjustment period to the system and that they may have some middling results throughout that.
Good point.
And there has been an adjustment period and they're still winning a ton.
Sacrificing your offense a little bit. Mm. You know, Matthews has not been, we've not seen Matthews a game.
No.
But the games that he's played, the numbers don't suggest that, you know, he still has that kind of freedom, I think, to go score 60 or 70 goals. Maybe
Christopher Steed come on the show and say you can't do it. You know, like that's not, you know, individuals have to make these sacrifices for the greater good of the team sometimes. And I think, you know, talked about the growing pains in the early going. The growing pains is, okay, we're doing this defensive thing. How do we now find offense within that? Niedermeyer talked about, okay, I can't do X. How do I do this now? And that's the piece where it feels like the Leafs are at. How do we find this offensive piece within this defensive structure?
Hey, quickly, before we go.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about the Nylander hit. Our boy, the Serpent, Jake, found it. He found the hit.
Oh, no.
I think he did. If we could,
I got to tell you, the production value is way better this year on this show.
It's against St. Louis.
Here it is. Here it is.
Oh, baby. Night.
Okay.
There you go.
We're on the panel tonight. Yeah. Anaheim, Toronto, 708 puck drop on Sportsnet. Now, that's all I'm watching now.
What?
His shift.
Willie hit.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're just on audio there, he gently rubbed someone.
I have to see a hit. He's got to double his hits tonight.
He had, you know, 100% improvement on his total.
That was the most nothing hit of all time. It had zero impact on the play.
If you were tallying hits, would you have counted it?
Of course.
It's a hit.
That's a hit. That is definitely a hit. No question.
So what went viral with Mark Gastineau giving it to Brett Favre
about taking the dive on a
tackle?
Yeah, because, I mean, the story was that
he was the leader.
Yeah, Strahan was going for the all-time record. And with 2 minutes left in the last game of the season, Brett Favre took a dive so that he could get the sack record, and the buddy confronted him about it.
Oh,
the
really?
Guy that used to have the record, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the most awkward videos of all time. You haven't seen that?
No.
It's been floating around the internet.
And then a full apology from Favre.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that the last one that Strahan got? Like that?
Yes.
It
was the 2 minutes of the last game of the season. He took a dive.
I think it was 22 to break the record.
Yeah, it was.
For the season.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't have the record, Mark Gastineau.
Yeah.
Think the league should go back and change it?
No.
Strahan had respect enough around the league yet. Yeah. People laying down for him.
Yeah.
Our thanks to Scott Niedermeyer in our Leaf Edition Hour. Next hour, we go national. Mike Rupp, NHL Network analyst, will join us. We'll tee up how many games? 14 tonight. The National Hockey League. Don't go away.